This is the Better Reading Podcast platform with stories behind the story, Jane's Be Better podcast, My Book Chat with Caroline Overington, and more. Looking for a particular podcast? Remember, you can always skip to it.
Welcome to the Better Reading Podcast, Stories Behind the Story, brought to you by Belinda Audio. Listen to Belinda audiobooks anywhere, everywhere.
Hi, this is Cheryl Arkell for the Better Reading Podcast, Stories Behind the Story. We talk to authors about how they came to tell us their story. Katie McMahon, welcome to Better Reading.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Katie is coming to us from Tasmania, right? Whereabouts in Tasmania?
So I'm near Hobart, just on the outskirts of Hobart, where it's quite foresty.
Oh, lovely. Katie McMahon has previously published articles in The Age and The Quarry before writing her debut novel, The Mistake, while attending a masterclass run by the internationally bestselling author Fiona McIntosh. Yay! We love Fiona.
Isn't she great?
Yeah. The Mistake is being described as women's fiction at its best for fans of Leanne Moriarty and Marianne Keyes. So we know that you live near Hobart in Tasmania and you're a GP as well.
Yeah, that's right. So that's kind of my day job.
Yeah. And you teach communication skills to medical students.
Yes, I do. So I realised it was 25 years since I was a first-year medical student when I met a bunch of the new first-year medical students, which I can't believe how quickly 25 years goes, right? But, yes, I do. I teach them, so both, you know, how to kind of ask questions and sound empathic and be empathic and get to know people and their stories, but also more technical stuff about what questions to ask.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, we'll get to that. But firstly, I want to start with, you know, where your passion, I mean, obviously you've got a passion for science, being a GP, and where it was that your love of reading and writing started.
Look, I have always loved reading and writing. As a child, I just read everything, you know, cereal boxes, books from the library, books off my mum's shelf, which were probably totally inappropriate for me to be reading. And then, yeah, I loved writing. I always really enjoyed doing my homework, like I was kind of nerdy. And I can remember being upstairs in my mum's study. There would be this old computer, you know, with the green blinking cursor, and I would be doing my English homework. And I would just spend hours, like, really enjoying kind of nailing a sentence or nailing a paragraph. And, you know, my friends would all be like, oh, wasn't it a pain to write that essay? And I'd be like, oh, yeah, it was such a pain. But actually, deep down, I'd be thinking, oh, I really enjoyed writing that. And then I nearly became a journalist. My father's a journalist, and I was accepted into a journalism course, but I took a gap year. And while I was away, you know, having my gap year, I kind of had this epiphany that I really wanted to do medicine. I wanted to become a doctor. So I came back to Australia having had this epiphany, and I needed to do year 11 and 12 again because the first time around I'd done, you know, English and English Lit and a language and drama, loved all that. But, of course, to do medicine I needed physics and chemistry and biology and, like, the hard maths. And so I kind of knuckled down and did all that and was lucky enough to get a place in medicine. And
what made you think that you – what was the epiphany? Was it a moment?
No, it wasn't – I guess it kind of all came to a moment where I had the thought, but, you know, I was a teenager. I was doing a lot of soul searching and, you know, what's my life for? And it was to do with wanting to help others. Like, it certainly wasn't like, oh, my goodness, I want to be a scientist. And when you said before about having a passion for science, I kind of rolled my eyes because obviously I think science is great and, of course, we need it as a doctor, and I'm not saying I don't employ it as a doctor. I certainly do. But I would still say actually that my passion for medicine is around the people and the stories and the sense of having an opportunity to try in some small way to maybe help some people. That's really what drove it, rather than I can't wait to discover another cause of some disease.
Particularly in being a GP, I guess. I mean, you're hearing stories day in, day out, aren't you?
Yeah, definitely.
And helping people, yeah. Okay, I mean, and to go back to and having done year 11 and 12, that is a huge commitment, isn't it?
Yeah, I did the 2 years again. And I was seen as such a weirdo because I was going to this high school where, you know, everyone else was in uniform and I was allowed to wear casual clothes because I was older. I went to a different high school. Yeah, so I was kind of the weird girl who they were all like, oh, my goodness, imagine doing this twice. She must be.
And is this in Hobart?
No, it was around where I grew up, which is in Frankston in Victoria.
Oh, right, okay. I mean, I'm sure that anybody that goes back to year 11 and 12 voluntarily is seen as a weirdo.
Yeah, totally. Oh, I was so weird.
Because most people can't wait to finish and get out.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, so you come back and you decide you want to do medicine. Talk me through that and the challenges of that, because that can't have been easy.
Oh, no, it wasn't easy. So it was around that time that I moved to Tassie.
Why?
I went to study medicine. I scraped in to University of Tasmania, but I have to say I didn't scrape out. I did quite well.
Good.
Thanks. Yeah, so I came to Hobart, and this was in sort of the mid-90s mid to late 90s, and started this six-year degree. I didn't know anyone in Hobart. And Hobart is just, as anyone who has lived here or visited here knows, it's just such a beautiful city.
Gorgeous.
It's gorgeous. And it's really thriving and booming now with the Mona effect of the last few years. I have to say when I moved here, it wasn't so much like that. It was recovering from, or maybe it was still in, you know, really, really difficult economic times. There was a lot of unemployment and so on. So it's just been a delight over the last 20 years to kind of watch it flower. But anyway, as to kind of my challenges of medicine, look, to be honest, like it's hard work, you have to study a lot, but I just felt so kind of embraced by my uni friends. We were this really tight little band. I'm still great friends with you know, some of the girls that I met in those early days. And, yeah, you know, it was just all the usual university stuff, kind of share houses and...
Do you know, I want to ask you something about being a doctor, which I've never asked anyone because I'm too embarrassed, but I've been watching that Netflix series, New Amsterdam, but even any, and I watched ER back in the time, but I can't look at anything. Like I can't look at somebody slicing skin or surgery or blood or holding an organ. I mean, I really seriously have to look away. Did you think about that when you entered it and how... it can be really stomach churning, can't it?
Yeah, totally. Look, I personally do not have that level of squeamishness at all.
And never have?
No, I really never have. I mean, I am very squeamish. There are things I have to look away from which are more regarding any sort of violence or even allusion to violence. I really just cannot stand. But things like a bit of blood, a bit of pus, a boil, an abscess, et cetera, I couldn't turn a hair. I don't turn a hair. And, you know, I mean, sorry, Cheryl, I hope this doesn't, you know, make you squeamish. But obviously in the early years of your medical training, you're learning anatomy, and people do generously donate their bodies to science for us to dissect and to learn about. And I have to honestly say that even doing that, it really didn't faze me. The hardest thing for me personally in studying at uni and being a junior doctor was particularly being a junior doctor, was just the pressure of the long hours and that weight of responsibility where, you know, to be honest, I don't think you can just come home and go, oh, well, it's just a job, you know, whatever, if I stuffed up, whatever.
You'd have to be a machine to feel that, like to think that that's how, you know, you can't.
Yeah, no, like I couldn't. So I would, you know, like I do remember those years I remember the anxiety I felt and the terror that I was going to make a mistake or just the exhaustion, 16-hour shifts and then...
I want to ask about that because why is that? You know, it's almost illegal, say, in my business, in marketing and, you know, book reviewing to ask somebody to work those hours. Yeah. I mean, I think it probably is actually. I mean, we just wouldn't do it. And also I wouldn't do it because the quality of writing on the other side probably wouldn't come out as well as it does if you're only working a 7 or 8 hour day, right? So why has it historically been that expectation of medical students to do that? Is it part of the formation of a doctor, or is it just because they treat you badly?
I don't know. Look, such a good question. And I have to say, I have no idea what the laws are or even really what the practice is for junior doctors now. You know, this, I graduated in 2001. So this is what was happening then, that we would work these very long hours. And definitely there's this huge cultural thing of being strong and tough. I mean, people will compliment each other by saying, oh, man, he is a machine. You know, that's almost seen as a positive thing, as someone who can just keep going. I can honestly say that in all the years, virtually all the doctors I've known have just worked hard. They've always put their best foot forward. But there is very often a sense of there being more work than you can comfortably do. And somehow, yeah, there is this culture of it being seen as really valuable to be able to just keep going and going and going. I don't understand it. I don't think it's healthy. Like, I think a reasonable level of hard work and resilience and challenge and all that, you know, obviously we all think
sure.
That's right.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't think it's healthy. And it's increasingly being recognised as unhealthy. You know, the mental, there's a lot of problems with mental illness. Doctors.
And so you chose to be a GP because you can go on to choose to be what it, you know, so many things, right?
Yep. So, you know, I chose general practice, which has been really good. I actually now essentially work in kind of women's health, and that's my special interest as a GP, because that's just an area I've always really enjoyed.
So then we've got left brain, right brain, right?
Yeah,
so,
right. Exactly.
You knew we were going to get to that, right? Because I mean, I even think the same of when I speak to lawyers, you know, and they're writing fabulous fiction. I think, how do you compartmentalise that? How does that work? So tell me about when you first, like, how long have you been writing, and how does it complement your career? Is it completely separate? How do you run it?
Yeah, good question. It's sort of hard to say, you know, when did I really start writing, because I was always just writing little bits of things. But because of, I guess, establishing my career and, you know, and then having a family, writing was always sort of pushed aside. But I do, you know, I'd write little things for a newsletter or whatever. You know, I wrote this little article for The Age and blah, blah. But then in around about 2017, my family were at the stage where I could – that it wasn't kind of all consuming, and work-wise I could have a little bit of time to write. And actually, yeah, that's what happened. So when my youngest child was getting back to school, so I had had quite a bit of time off from general practice or been working much reduced, and I sort of thought, oh, to sort of segue back into work, I'm going to go and talk to someone that I respect, this fellow I know who's a general practitioner who I'd kind of worked with over the years and who'd had this really interesting career and who I just knew to be a really good listener. I thought, I'm just going to go and talk to him, Frank, his name is, and, you know, just throw some ideas around and maybe get a bit of guidance. So I went and talked to him, and I thought he'd just sort of say, oh, yes, well, maybe, you know, you could work at such and such a clinic, or perhaps you might like to, you know, develop your interest in women's health a bit more. But he sort of, I can't even remember what he asked me, but I ended up in tears and basically saying, I've got this thing in me to write and I want to do writing. And he kind of said, well, you know, you seem to me to be a person who likes a bit of structure. Why don't you enroll in some sort of writing course? So I thought, oh, well, that sounds reasonable.
Yeah,
good tip. It was totally not what I had expected. And I was astounded to find myself in tears. Like, I was kind of mortified and embarrassed and astounded. But what that told me when I analysed it afterwards was, wow, obviously this is really strong and I've just been putting it to one side and I should do it. So I talked to my husband. He was like, yeah, you definitely have to do it. He was great, really supportive. So I ended up enrolling in this Masters of Creative Writing degree, which was all done by distance. And you know, this was obviously before we all started doing everything by Zoom last year. Mm-hmm. You know, but it was all online learning. And I got heaps out of that, really learned some great techniques. And I must say, I didn't finish the course. I'm not a master of creative writing. I'm just a lapsed master's of creative writing student, but I learned a lot from the units that I did. And part of the reason that I stopped doing that was because my lovely dad suggested that I might like to do the Fiona McIntosh masterclass and actually gave me that course for present. I know.
Such very generous.
Yeah. He normally has a policy about no Christmas presents for anyone over 12. So he broke his policy for me.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
So you enrolled?
Yes, I enrolled. And off I went. So this would have been in 2018. And can I also say it was like my longest time away by myself for you know, I don't know, a decade or something. So part of it was just, oh, my goodness, 6 nights in a service department where I don't have to think about anyone else's breakfast or anyone else's, you know, dirty undies or anything. I can just be doing something really fun that I want to do. So I go along. So this was in Adelaide, and that's where I met Fiona for the first time and a lovely cohort. I think there are maybe 12 or 15 of us, mostly women. There was one guy who was a GP also from New Zealand. Anyway, the main thing I remember from that course and the main thing I got out of it was Fiona just saying, stop being so precious. So where that resonated with me is that, like, I'm quite a perfectionist and quite self-critical, which of course is in a way it's a strength, you know, as a writer or as anything, but the weakness of it meant that, like, I'd spent bloody months writing, you know, 15 pages. They were very well written, 15 pages, but 15 pages does not make a novel.
So you paid all that money. You spent, well, your father paid all that money. You spent 6 nights in a service apartment.
Yeah.
And you could have listened to the Better Reading podcast and we could have told you that.
It wouldn't have been as much fun.
No, it wouldn't have.
So, look, that made me write a first draft. And I must quickly emphasise that I really believe that don't be so precious advice only holds up for your first draft. And after that, I became very precious and very meticulous again with my rewriting. But it just helped me get over that block.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's not the fact that you're going to lose those skills that you have, but I think what Fiona means is just do it. Start it, finish it, and then come back and be self-critical.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is where I see a lot of writers say that to me. You just, you know, I remember even, you know, years ago being at the Adelaide Writers Festival and speaking to Isabella Allende. Oh, I wasn't speaking to her. I was listening to her. What was I thinking? But, you know, somebody in the audience asked, you know, when do you write? She said, I wake up in the morning and I write from 9 to 5. I start and I finish. And I thought back then, wow, if you're a writer, that's a very good tip. Yeah. Because, you know, people kind of see it as a bit of a la-la kind of thing. I'll dip in, dip out, do whatever. But, you know, as you know, if it's going to be a book that you're going to finish, you have to apply to it like you apply yourself to a job.
Oh, totally. And, you know, like there's days you wake up and you just really don't feel like going to work. Like,
oh, yeah. I have those days too.
Oh, of course we do. Like surely everyone does, right?
Yeah.
Really, like I don't think you, I certainly don't wake up and think, oh, I can't wait to express myself creatively and all the characters and all, you know, the metaphors. I can't wait. You know, like of course there's so many days where I just sort of sit there going, oh, this is hopeless and why am I bothering? And but like I did, thanks to Fiona, I would just sit there anyway and just write something, not quite 9 to 5, but school hours a few days a week, I would just get something down. And so at least then after, I can't really remember how many months, I don't know, about 12 months probably, I had a first draft.
Mm. I see a lot of authors too on Facebook. They run these sessions and it's so generous. I often think it's so generous of them. What they do is they just all write together for an hour, one day a week. You know, and I think that that, again, is another incentive, that is to sit there, the discipline of writing. And I often think, isn't that weird, particularly in COVID, you know, you're all sitting in your homes and you're all writing together, but that must give you something, doesn't it?
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, it would make you through it and it gives you that camaraderie, which otherwise you don't get as a writer, and which you do get in many workplaces, don't you?
The lovely Candace Fox does it. I don't know if you know her. She's a crime fiction writer. And she just does it, I don't know when it is, but I often see all the little, just watching it on Facebook, see everybody jump on and all they're doing is sitting there typing.
Oh, wonderful. Oh, yeah,
it is wonderful.
Yeah. One thing I remember off Facebook that I thought of so much, you know, when I was doing this, was Margaret Atwood was promoting a masterclass she was doing, which I didn't want to pay to do her masterclass. I didn't need another masterclass at that point. I didn't really feel I was masterclassed out. But she said, you know, one tip she gave was the bin is your friend. And I was just like, yeah, the bin. Mm. Just throw it in the bin if it's not working.
Yeah, that's a really good tip, isn't it?
That's a great tip, isn't it?
So from start to finish, how long did it take you to write?
I reckon, about 2.5 years from start to finish,
And were you working?
I did actually, I was working at the time. So I worked all through that. I didn't really tell anyone much. Actually, when my husband read the first draft, he was like, oh, this is, you know, more than I thought. He goes, you sound quite funny in this.
It's an insight into somebody's soul, isn't it, reading fiction?
Yeah, potentially.
How did you feel when you came to the end of the project?
As in when I had my first draft ready? Yeah, good question. I actually was in the extraordinarily fortunate and unusual position of receiving an offer from a publisher right around the time I finished my first draft. I was still actually tinkering with the it kind of all didn't go according to my plan, but I was still tinkering with the last few chapters when Tegan Morrison from Echo, who had read the first three chapters, asked to see the whole manuscript. So that process of finishing the first draft was all kind of overlaid with this, oh my goodness, thrill and excitement and trepidation, I guess, of showing that to her.
And how does it feel to be compared to Leanne Moriarty? Because, I mean, you know, everywhere you look, people are comparing it to that.
You can see my face. I just wince with mortification because of how flattering that comparison is. I think she is just a brilliant, brilliant writer, and not only in the, you know, not just as compared to the, you know, other people in the genre in which she writes, like compared with any writer I can think of. She just does so many brilliant things in terms of plot, in terms of characterization, in terms of dialogue. So yes, I feel mortified and also thrilled to be compared to her.
Good. Well, just one last question before we go, and I'm interested in this, because your career, you know, being a GP and being a writer, do you think that the twain meet in the centre? Do you think you bring some of that job into this job? And, you know, does that happen? Does it intertwine? Because you're speaking, you're hearing people's stories day in, day out, aren't you?
Yeah, that's such a good question, and interestingly one I've never really thought about. They must do. Look, I think, to be perfectly honest, I think, you know, every doctor has strengths and weaknesses, right? And I think my strength as a doctor, you know, some people's strength is their amazing diagnostic ability or their great decision making or they're fantastic at surgery or, you know, whatever it is. And I think my strength as a doctor is the ability to listen. And I think that to be a writer, you know, writing in the genre in which I write, you have to have listened and observed and tried to understand life. So even though, of course, I would never use anything that I learn at work.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Fiction, you know, yeah. That goes without saying.
Yeah.
There is still that ability to, you know, that to listen and observe, which I think is the common skill of both areas of work. Yeah.
I've got to tell you, Katie, if I went to my GP and she told me she was a writer, I'd be thrilled to bits. It would in my pedestal. I think, wow, you're doing this and you can do that. I mean, it would be a bonus, I think.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, that's really nice. I mean, I wonder if many people would say that. Yeah, that's interesting.
Well, the book is called The Mistake. Katie McMahon, thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
If you'd like more information about Better Reading, follow us on Facebook or visit betterreading.com.au.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by Belinda Audio. Belinda audiobooks are available on CD and MP3 from online booksellers and bookshops everywhere, or you can download from Audible, Google Play or the iBook Store. We've also created our own app called BorrowBox that's available from both the App Store and Google Play. All you need to do to get it working is to download the app, join your local public library, and you'll gain access to the world's best collection of ebooks and e-audiobooks available for you to loan on your phone or your personal device. Belinda, we're here to enable you to escape, imagine, grow, and be inspired through the power of storytelling. Belinda Audiobooks. Anywhere, everywhere.
If you enjoyed this podcast, leave us a review and check out the other podcasts on the Better Reading Network.